I'm going to talk today about oxygen being the tool of life and some very important unknown principles which are esoteric in nature will be brought to your attention. We live on a very physical planet, and there are those amongst us who believe that our planet is somehow designed to take life. Not only to take life, but to diversify it in extraordinary different species. And those of us who believe that this is a living universe, along with Aristotle, who said that life was a quality, but also part of what we call the mass of nature. Nature in its solid, in its liquid, in its gaseous, and in its quantum forms was what he said or implied. And out of this has arisen that extraordinary observation, which includes many scientists, that there is an anthropic principle at work in the universe. Anthropos means mankind. We study anthropology. The principle is called the anthropic principle. But if those words are a little bit off-putting, then call it teleology. What you and I believe, that the universe has certain principles which are related to the laws of physics, and those principles embody the idea that the universe has a quality that encourages life. The expression of life. And what is more, science will say, or many scientists will say in the anthropic principle or teleology, that that relationship between life and the universe gives the universe certain qualities of behavior. Certain qualities of behavior. Now, does the universe sound like a non-living entity when you hear of the anthropic principle? Not at all. And it is the esoteric contention that our universe is a living thing. And when you come to consider principles like atheism and the belief in God and agnosticism, you should remember this anthropic principle, which is embedded in science, that the universe has a behavioral pattern which is commensurate with living things, with life that is embedded in it, and also with the principles of physics. Very important. So let's look at this planet of ours. Here we have it. Nice picture. You'll find it in most of my books because it's an important picture. It shows our globe. Physical, of course, gas, liquid and solid, which the sciences accept and which the sciences say are interpretable by our five senses. And you remember yesterday's lectures and the fact that science bases reality on anything that the five senses tell science. That's the basis of science. And our five senses tell us that we live on a physical planet covered mainly by sea, and that the blue ring about it, which is described as etheric, is really the sphere occupied by oxygen. Our atmosphere is 4/5 nitrogen. The air we breathe is 4/5 nitrogen, but 1/5 of it is oxygen. And without oxygen, we cannot live. We are unable to breathe. And one of the largest systems in the body is a mechanism for taking that oxygen into the body and circulating it to the tissues, without which they cannot live. And we therefore suffer from diseases of respiration. And we die of diseases of respiration. So that is the situation with oxygen. It clings to the surface of the earth because it responds to gravity. The gas oxygen is heavier than air, and it sinks towards the gravitational center of the earth and therefore surrounds the earth in that blue strip there that we call the etheric. But note also that there are two further planes on the earth, one in pink, which shows that there is an astral plane made up of emotional particles, which respond to gravity in the same way that oxygen does. And we call it the astral plane. And some of us know from our own experiences that we fashion a body made of emotional particles. And we call it the astral body. It is partly derived from the oxygen and physical world, but also mainly derived from the outer ring, which is shown in orange. And the outer ring is, of course, mental. It is made up of mental particles. And I am one of those privileged individuals on the earth who are now able to, under certain circumstances, environment permitting, I'm able to see these mental particles and describe something of their activity. But there's something else interesting about that extraordinary anthropic approach to the problems of our universe. We have a physical globe that we live on. We respond to the gravity which it enhances or adds to. And we suddenly are doing very well. We can even count it in terms of thousands of years. For 3, 4, 5,000 years, we have, as humanity, made massive advances, beginning, some of us would say, with Babylon and Syria and Egypt, and maybe Atlantis, an island in the Atlantic Ocean, which was destroyed by tsunamis caused by, well, we're not sure of the causes. We don't want to be diverted here. There is another factor which is very important. Not only oxygen surrounding the earth tightly, You climb to the top of our mountains, you begin to get breathless. You are short of oxygen because the 20% has dropped from 20% down to 10 and maybe even 5%. And we have had brave people, brave doctors, go to the top of Everest without oxygen cylinders to find out just how far we can enter into a deprived oxygen world at the top of our highest mountains. There's something else that I'm beginning to describe or move towards, which supports the anthropic principle, is the extraordinary fact that our sun, our star, every now and again, is eclipsed by the moon. And the result of this eclipse is that the life-supporting energies of the sun, heat, magnetism, light, the effect of the eclipse is that this continuous flow of light, heat, and magnetism towards the earth, which sustains the oxygen's giving of life, that this flow is broken. It is broken in an eclipse. And the extraordinary thing, which reinforces the anthropic principle, is the fact that in an eclipse, the sun is blotted out by the moon, so that there is a complete darkness shadow cast upon the earth that exactly fits the disk of the eclipsing moon, exactly fits over the ring, seen, of course, with perspective, exactly fits over the sun and causes a break in that flow. And if the eclipse occurs every 30 or 40 or 80 or 90 minutes, it still stops the flow of light, heat, and magnetism to the earth and creates what we call a make and break effect. Every time there is an eclipse, instead of the flow being direct current from the sun, it is broken and it comes in short periods. And the effect of this make and break action of the moon is that it draws life merely to the surface of the earth. It isn't all absorbed into the content of the earth, the center of the earth. The effect of the eclipse of the sun is that its energies are made to make and break, and the effect of the make and break effect on the solar energies is that they tend to stay on the surface of the earth where there is oxygen. Don't let science put you off. They don't know. They know a little bit. The 4 inches of the meter stick is what science knows about gas, liquid, and solid. The rest is unknown, mainly dark energy and dark matter, which Douglas Baker, not the Theosophical Society, I regret to say, yet, Douglas Baker insists, is mental energy and a little bit of emotional energy with it. And it's called dark matter by science because they are in the dark. They can't photograph it. They can't break it down into tiny parts and analyze it. But it is pouring into our planet. It is calculated by Leadbeater that the astral world, the aura, the fuzz, if you want to know what science calls it. The fuzz of the Earth's emotional plane is approaching the moon. Some of the astronauts that landed on the moon had difficulty with their emotional lives when they returned to the Earth. The reason being that during their period in the vicinity of the moon and on the moon, they had no astral body. They had no astral body. They were beyond the astral plane of the Earth. By the time we go back, let's hope that the astral world of the Earth will be embracing the moon, because it will make life easier on the moon if we start to colonize it. And we can't get anywhere in the solar system unless we colonize the moon. Because if we colonize the moon, it means that we can put huge numbers of rockets from the Earth to the moon, overcome them, because we've got the resources on the Earth to do it. The rockets can get to the moon, but then to get to the outer planets of the solar system doesn't need the effort that it needed to get out of Earth's gravity. It greatly depends on whether there is water on the moon. If there is water on the moon, it will be at depth, maybe iced up a little bit. But if there's water on the moon, it will be helpful, because we will have H2O water, and we will need the hydrogen, if we can split it off from the water, to empower rockets to get to the outer planets from the moon. Yes, very important point that. And we will need the oxygen to give the moon an atmosphere. We know how to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. If there is water already on the moon, it will be a great boost to us. So the moon is an important factor, which you should always remember when you talk about the anthropic principle. And the anthropic principle embodies the possibility, as it says quite clearly. The anthropic principle implies that there is some connection between life in the universe, the laws of physics, and the way the universe behaves. There it is. If you want to get it later, you can get it. But always remember these esoteric admonitions about the possibility of there being meaning to the universe. Not just a big bang, and heavens knows what the Big Bang has produced and is going to produce by chance. The anthropic principle suggests there could be millions of universes, because it would be very much harder to say that there was a fence holding matter in one place and that the only universe is our one. The ex-astronomer royal, the president of the Royal Society in England, maintains just that there are perhaps infinite universes. Perhaps our universe is a living thing. Maybe it's only a cell in the body of a greater being. Maybe Sagittarius, and Sagittarius is the first real evidence we have of life elsewhere, life in inverted commas. Sagittarius looks as if it could be, have a lot of the anthropic principle embodied in it, and that is a scientific factor. And the row that is going on in the world, especially in America, is the row between a planned, designed, God-infused universe created by some immense being, but it has design, and the scientists who say, just by chance, the result of phenomena occurring in the Big Bang. But still, some scientists saying there may be an entropic principle. I will leave that now for the moment. I'm going to come to something that many of you have looked at in relation to the subject, and that is yoga. Yoga is very old, thousands of years old. And it seemed as if the Hindus in ancient times, who were very prolific from the point of view of producing families, sought two things. They sought how a man could, the woman being engaged in bearing children and raising them, how a man could isolate himself for a few hours each day from domestic demands, seating himself in a way that enabled him to breathe well, to be secluded, and in breathing he discovered in this yoga posture, he discovered that the breathing added life to him. It gave him more life, and also the relaxation of hiding himself in a posture enabled him to enjoy life more. Thousands of years before, science discovered oxygen in the atmosphere. The yogis called this vital force that came with breathing, in which they said streamed from the sun, they called it prana. And you can't look at yoga for very long without coming across the necessity of accepting that there is a vital force somewhere in the atmosphere that we breathe in, which gives us vitality or life force, prana. I would like nothing better to find a scientific basis for prana. No such evidence exists. And out of the concept of prana grew the concept of chakras, force centers, in which you could stack the prana of the life force. You can't store oxygen in the body. The only pretensions of storing oxygen is if you can accumulate a lot of blood in your spleen, your organ called the spleen, which looks like a clenched fist. It's got a hilum and it's got a cortex. And when you get a fright and you're being attacked and you need oxygen desperately, the spleen absorbs the blood and becomes huge with oxygenated blood. And if you get involved in the fight with somebody, a predator, then the spleen suddenly contracts and the body gets a flow, extra flow of red blood cells and is oxygenated. And so the yogis performed a magnificent, excellent service to the Far East. It said there was a life force in the air we breathe. Nobody knew anything about oxygen. And they built a science around this principle. And then, late in our millennium, oxygen was discovered in the air. So these factors now become clear, I hope, that prana may have been the Hindus' 5,000-year-old method of pointing to the atmosphere that we breathe and saying there's a life force there. We can prove it in ourselves and what we're doing. And then along comes Western science and discovers oxygen and wants to find, oh, where is this prana that you're all crazy about? No evidence yet. But I have seen vitality globules. And I've talked to other people who see them. And these vitality globules spin through the sunlit atmosphere of the earth. It may be that these vitality globules, which Leadbeater described clairvoyantly, and Baker confirms that they exist, especially in a sunlit atmosphere, maybe they are housing 7 neutrinos. Because neutrinos stream from the sun. And the content of the vitality globule may be neutrinos. What Leadbeater also said was that the vitality globule clings to the oxygen helix. Maybe Leadbeater was a little confused and saw vitality globules clinging to the DNA molecule, which is also a twin helix. A DNA molecule is thought to consist of 2 long chains wound about each other in the form of a double helix. In duplicating, each chain unwinds and builds a new identical chain. Leadbeater said that the oxygen molecule was a twin helix. The oxygen molecule was a twin helix. And that attached to the oxygen molecule were vitality globules. This, in my book Meditation, showed the vitality globule, but Leadbeater said that the content of the vitality globule, the essence of prana, was, in fact, the anu, the ultimate physical particle of yoga, of India, of esoteric science. Leadbeater said that the vitality globule, whatever it is, it exists, is attached to the oxygen molecule, when in fact it may be drawn towards the code of living, the code of life that contains our hereditary information. Now that sounds to me like a lot of factors put together which enables life to exist on the earth in amazing diversity. Now let's go a little further into the subject of oxygen being the tool of life. Here is an apple. I took this from an apple orchard that is dying, old, when I arrived at Little Elephant 40 years ago. It's a dried up apple, and it contains the seeds of the apple. I have only to put this into water, ensuring that the water has a little warmth to it, like you would have in the soil around here and the natural heat of the sun, and oxygen reaching it. And out of that will grow a group of young saplings of apples to bear lovely rounded fruit to eat. Just remember that. They discovered some wheat seeds in the pyramids. And the wheat seeds were lying there, and they gathered them up and planted them to see what kind of wheat that the Egyptians produced to feed their growing population on the banks of the River Nile. The wheat seeds grew, even after 5,000 years of desiccation, taking water out of the seed and allowing it to survive by natural dehydrating forces. The wheat seeds produced nothing extraordinary and nothing helpfully new that they could draw upon. But it's worth remembering that nature has provided seeds. The Shakespearean sonnets, of course, are the work of a genius who was able to bring out this factor of the latent psychological forces which lie in the human seed. And if you read the sonnets again carefully, you will see that they are addressed to a young friend of Shakespeare's. And the sonnets address the young friend and saying to him, "Let your miraculous beauty pass on through you and through these sonnets into the future, always reproducing the you and the meaning in the sonnets." To inspire man, he knew, the man who wrote them, not Shakespeare, the man who wrote them told the story that his sonnets and his works would live forever, being regenerated in this youth who would go on to live longer than he, marry, have children, and pass his nature on. So there is much to be gained from the understanding of the role of oxygen. But of course, we, being scientifically orientated, if you magnetize the water and pass it through your pipe, the pipes of your house, the pipes of your plumbing, it'll take the calcium off the lining of the pipes. So instead of the pipes blocking up with calcified parts, you can remove the calcium parts by passing magnetized water through it, because the magnetism widens the dipole and therefore gives the water molecule energy. Energy is stored in the dipole, and when it goes by the calcium deposits in the plumbing, off comes the calcium from the pipe walls, and you maintain the life of the pipes. Lack of oxygen is the root cause. It's the root cause of clogged arteries, diabetes, stroke, and plain old aging processes. The wear and tear of the body knocks hell into the lining of the arteries so that they deposit calcium and degenerate, and we die of stroke, whether it's a heart block or whether it's a block in the brain. Most of us will die of something to do with that. And so oxygen may have something in its presence, which means that the yogis were right in devising breathing exercises which would present as much oxygen as possible to the arteries through which the blood was flowing. I've said that about 1/5 of the atmosphere of the Earth is oxygen. If we increase it further and made it 25%, not 20%, but 25% of the atmosphere, we would have incessant fires all over the planet, such as they had recently in Australia, in California, and in parts of the planet which are desert-like, but contain scrub undergrowth that can quickly catch light through lightning flashes. When lightning flashes, it oxidizes the nitrogen in the atmosphere. And that oxidized nitrogen falls to the ground and reaches plants which need nitrogen in order to build the tissues of the plant. I go into all this merely to show you there is endless support for the anthropic principle. Is all this by chance and so desperately necessary for human life, never mind animal and plant life, but for human life, and there's no purpose behind it? Esoteric science believes there is a purpose behind life, that it is expressing, and has always taught that there is a purpose behind life, and in the behavior that results from oxygenation. How differently we feel when we are oxygenated. I had a doctor friend, a Hindu lady, Dr. Datlai, and when she was presented with most of the patients that she had in India, hundreds of them, the population now approaching 1 billion, and her remedy for them to feel better and to shake off whatever it was they were suffering was to tell them to run up a hill and come down again. And the oxygenation of the effort of climbing the hill would make them feel better, which would prove to her that their problem was basically they were not breathing properly. I taught in East End schools, and it alarmed me that the average child in East End schools did not understand that the breathing of English people and all humans was dependent upon the diaphragm flattening, drawing air into the lungs, as well as the ribs expanding. And you used to have to make them breathe with this twin factor in mind. Diaphragmatic breathing and, what's this one? Intercostal diaphragmatic breathing. So be sure that you, your family, your friends, everybody know what is diaphragmatic intercostal breathing. We're talking about the organs of respiration, the lungs. Lungs at the top and going right down to the tiny little things you can barely see with the naked eye are the alveoli. Here is an alveoli, very thin endothelial lining to it, and it's part of many alveoli which adjoin a pulmonary. There's a pulmonary tube, as it were, bringing oxygen into them. That's what your lung is made up of. Wrapping around them are the capillaries of the blood system. These things are called capillaries. They cover the alveoli with blood vessels, each alveoli with blood vessels. And it was this that prompted Alice Bailey to say, where land, the body, air, and water meet, land, air, and water meet, magic is performed. Alice Bailey said magic is performed in the alveoli of the lungs, and she meant, of course, a kind of breathing. And Douglas Baker has written in his book, The Opening of the Third Eye, that by using the bellows breath at a particularly critical moment of your meditation, when concentration is at its maximum, can give you an entrance to the higher kingdoms. The bellows breath is a process of placing the tongue on the roof of the mouth, the palate, and making a very sharp intake of air, which passes through the nostrils and tickles the little filamentous parts of the first cranial nerve. Get it all in my anatomy book. The bellows breath and how to breathe it so as to bring to reality what Alice Bailey called the magic of where land, sea, and air meet. By sea, she meant, of course, the blood, which is salty like the sea. And the other two factors of oxygen in the air we breathe. And so, have a look, look it up. Oxygen, the tool of life.